Hello and welcome to Radio Eyes Children's Story Hour. As a reminder, Radio Eyes is a reading service intended for people who are blind or have other disabilities that make it difficult to read printed material. Today, I will be reading from Marie Curie. Your reader today is Doris. We will continue with this book, which was published by Reference Point and has a copyright year 2017 by John Allen. With her daughter, Irene, and her sister, Branya, she traveled to Stockholm and delivered to the assembled scientists and dignitaries a memorable address describing her work that led to the discovery of the new elements. Again, in 1911, some scientists questioned whether Marie Curie deserved this second award. In its decision, however, the Nobel Committee displayed canny judgment. The Curie's 1903 prize for physics, which they shared with Antoine-Henri Becquerel, had specifically addressed the discovery of uranium rays and the Curie's crucial perception that the rays provided clues about the structure of the atom. In succeeding years, other physicists, especially Ernest Rutherford, built on that perception in their studies of atomic structure. Rutherford performed tests in which he fired radioactive particles at atoms, revealing atoms to be not solid units but composed mostly of empty space, each with a core nucleus surrounded by charged electrons. By contrast, Marie Curie's 1911 prize for chemistry recognized her work in chemical analysis, probing the nature of radium and polonium. In particular, this analysis suggested the medical use for radium, including the diagnosis and treatment of diseases such as cancer. Since Curie's breakthroughs occurred in two different disciplines, science historians believe her two Nobel Prizes were fully justified. The following are excerpts from the lecture Marie Curie presented to the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences on the occasion of her receiving the 1911 Nobel Prize in Chemistry. Some 15 years ago, the radiation of uranium was discovered by Henri Becquerel, and 2 years later, the study of this phenomenon was extended to other substances, first by me and then by Pierre Curie and myself. This study rapidly led us to the discovery of new elements, the radiation of which, while being analogous with that of uranium, was far more intense. All the elements emitting such radiation I have termed radioactive, and the new property of matter revealed in this emission has thus received the name radioactivity. In this field, the importance of radium for the viewpoint of general theories has been decisive. The history of the discovery and the isolation of this substance has furnished proof of my hypothesis that radioactivity is an atomic property of matter and can provide a means of seeking new elements. Viewing the subject from this angle, it can be said that the task of isolating radium is the cornerstone of the edifice of the science of radioactivity. Moreover, radium remains the most useful and powerful tool in radioactivity laboratories. I believe that it is because of these considerations that the Swedish Academy of Sciences has done me the very great honor of awarding me this year's Nobel Prize for Chemistry. Footnote: Marie Curie, Nobel Lecture, December 11, 1911, Radium and the New Concepts in Chemistry, nobelprize.org, 2015, www.nobelprize.org. After her triumphant appearance in Sweden, Curie returned home exhausted and ill. Months of turmoil had left her plagued by depression and a painful kidney ailment. In January 1912, she entered a private clinic under a false name and eventually underwent kidney surgery. The procedure was a success, but afterward Curie suffered a complete nervous collapse. She withdrew to a secret address near Paris, where she used her maiden name, Svetlanka, to avoid press inquiries. It was almost a full year before she was able to return to the lab. During her period of seclusion, Curie did receive a visit from a delegation of Polish intellectuals. The group appealed to her patriotic feelings, urging her to abandon the scandal-obsessed Parisians and relocate her Radium Institute to Poland. Touched by this plea, Curie nevertheless had to decline. As a tribute to her husband's memory, she believed the Radium Institute belonged in France, and she intended to honor her original commitment. She did, however, direct two of her gifted Polish assistants to help establish a similar institute in Warsaw. Service during the war. The Radium Institute finally opened its doors in Paris in August 1914, soon after World War I broke out in Europe. As German battalions invaded Belgium and northeastern France, the French government evacuated Paris for the city of Bordeaux in the southwest. With German troops likely to attack Paris, work at the Institute was out of the question. Curie arranged for her daughters to stay in Brittany on the coast, where they had spent the summer with friends. At the government's urging, she left for Bordeaux, carrying with her on a train a lead-lined box. Inside was a single gram of pure radium, the entire supply that existed in all of France. Curie was determined to secure the precious element for her research. Once the radium was hidden in Bordeaux, safe from enemy hands, she returned to Paris. With Germany threatening her beloved Poland as well as her adopted country of France, Curie was determined to serve the Allied cause. She decided to devote her efforts to saving lives by way of a familiar technology, X-rays. Enlisting the help of the Red Cross, she was able to equip a fleet of 20 trucks with X-ray equipment powered by the engine batteries. The trucks, which grateful soldiers began to call La Petite Curie, Little Curies, could transport bulky X-ray machines to battlefield hospitals. There, doctors used the machines to pinpoint bullet and shrapnel wounds and examine broken bones for immediate surgery. Curie herself learned to drive one of the vans and operate the X-ray equipment. 17-year-old Irene, with a quick mind and an appetite for new experiences, joined Marie as her first assistant. Having spent too much time apart from her mother in the last few years, Irene treasured her shared adventure in the mobile X-ray unit. Campaigning for radium. In 1916, Paris seemed safe from German threat, and Marie Curie returned to work at the Radium Institute. Retrieving the gram of radium from Bordeaux, she used it to collect radon, a radioactive gas, in very thin glass tubes. Doctors could inject one of these tubes into a patient's body at the precise spot to attack diseased tissue, a technique that looked forward to modern radiation therapy. Curie also trained women to assist in radiology exams. Her war experience with X-ray machines had reaffirmed the usefulness of radiation technology. After the war, Curie worked tirelessly to promote the Radium Institute. Her innate shyness would disappear when she had to approach rich business owners or philanthropists for donations or other assistance. Due to Curie's long-standing links with French industry, the Radium Institute was able to maintain its stock of the precious element for which it was named. Nevertheless, Curie dreamed of doubling that single gram of radium in order to expand her research. In May 1920, she explained to Marie Mattingly Maloney, a visiting American journalist, that the United States had 50 times more radium than her world-renowned laboratory. The interview appearing in a popular American magazine for women led to the Marie Curie Radium Campaign. It was an organized drive to fund the great woman scientist's life work. Marie also wrote a brief autobiography for publication in America, the amazing story of Madame Curie's heroic rise in the male-dominated world of science, appealed to the can-do spirit of Americans and led to a flood of public support and donations. In 1921, to cap the successful campaign, Curie and her daughters sailed to the United States. During her whirlwind tour, Curie spoke to delighted audiences and met scientists, business leaders, celebrities, and politicians, including President Warren G. Harding, at a White House reception. She shook so many hands in the first day of the tour that she finally placed her right arm in a sling to discourage well-wishers. By tour's end, she had amassed equipment or samples, cash donations for the Institute, and a second gram of precious radium. This remarkable woman, frail, shy, prematurely aged, dressed in black, and speaking softly with a Polish accent, had become for millions a living legend. Marie Curie's final years and legacy. Curie's triumphant trip to America helped restore her reputation. Some of this was due to exaggerated claims for radium therapy. Curie cures cancer. In May of 1921, this headline appeared in newspapers across America, writes biographer Barbara Goldsmith. This claim alleviated a fear of death and struck a deep chord in America's collective psyche. Curie was not responsible for such claims, but she saw how they could boost fundraising and did little to discourage them. The French establishment also opened its arms to the venerable scientist. The previously all-male Académie Nationale de Médecine, National Academy of Medicine, in Paris welcomed her as a member, largely because of her research into radium therapy. Years of working with radioactive materials took their toll on Curie's health. In the early 1930s, she often felt too weak to go to the lab. She finally sought treatment in Geneva, Switzerland, where doctors diagnosed aplastic pernicious anemia, a disease of the bone marrow. Experts today believe Curie's unprotected work with X-ray machines during the war may have been more harmful than her radium exposure. On July the 4th, 1934, she died. Tributes poured in from around the world as Marie Curie was laid to rest in the Sceaux Cemetery next to her beloved Pierre. Curie's rich legacy in science is twofold, as an innovative researcher in her own right and as an inspiration to women in science everywhere. Her discovery with Pierre of the radioactive elements radium and polonium contributed to new insights about the nature of radiation and the structure of atoms. Through Marie's efforts, the Radium Institute became one of the world's top facilities for research into radioactivity and medical uses for radiation. Her study of radioactivity is in many ways the starting point for the atomic age, which would encompass nuclear energy, the atomic bomb, cancer treatment, radiocarbon dating, and even molecular biology and modern genetics. Her additional role as an inspirational example for other female scientists began at home. Her brilliant daughter, Irene, also became a physicist, marrying another scientist at the Institute, Frédéric Joliot, in 1926. The couple won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1935, the third such award in the Curie family. But it's the story of Marie Curie's persistent quest to make her mark in science that has inspired so many women in the field. Madame Curie was the mother of us all, explains science writer Nathalie Angier, a role model for every girl who stakes a claim to a life of the mind, particularly that part of the mind too often deemed masculine, the scientific mathematical part. I have interviewed hundreds of female scientists over the years, and a number of them have told me how, in their girlhood, the story of Madame Curie captivated and inspired them. Irene Curie and Frédéric Joliot. From a young age, it was obvious that Irene Curie shared with her famous parents the same penetrating intellect. Growing up, Irene and her sister, Eve, often did not see Marie for days or weeks at a time, yet Irene dreamed of following her mother's path and one day making her own lasting contribution to science. For her doctorate, Irene focused on the study of polonium, one of the elements her mother had discovered. Working in the laboratory with Marie, Irene grew fond of another lab assistant, Frédéric Joliot. Like Irene's parents, she and Frédéric came to depend on each other professionally and personally. Because young Frédéric lacked Irene's academic credentials, some observers thought he was using Irene to advance his career. In fact, Marie herself had doubts, but the couple's marriage proved strong. In the 1930s, the Joliot-Curies pursued their own research on radiation and atomic structure. Like physicists around the world, they furiously sought to identify and describe new atomic particles. They narrowly missed being first to discover the neutron and the positron. Like her mother, Iran suffered from radiation sickness, and she also developed tuberculosis, a deadly lung disease. Nevertheless, she refused to slow the pace of her work. In January 1934, Frederick bombarded aluminum with alpha particles, producing a so-called radioisotope, a radioactive cousin of phosphorus. He and Iran had discovered artificial radioactivity, for which they won their own Nobel Prize. Iran's mother, with only months to live, was able to witness her daughter's triumph. Important events in the life of Marie Curie. 1867, Marie Sklodowska is born May 15th in Warsaw, Poland. 1884, Marie begins to attend the Floating University, an illegal night school. 1886, Marie starts working as a governess to support her sister Branya's university studies in Paris, France. 1891, Marie travels to Paris to begin taking classes at the Sorbonne. 1893, Marie earns her undergraduate degree in physics, the first woman to do so at the Sorbonne. 1894, while seeking lab facilities for a job, Marie meets a scientist and teacher named Pierre Curie. 1895, Marie marries Pierre Curie in a Paris suburb. 1896, Marie reads about Antoine-Henri Becquerel's discovery of uranium rays and decides to study them for her doctorate. 1898, Marie discovers polonium on February 17th and with Pierre discovers radium on December 26th. 1903, Marie and Pierre, along with Becquerel, are awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics. 1906, Pierre is struck by a horse-drawn wagon on a Paris street and dies instantly. 1911, Marie is awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry. 1914, the Radium Institute, dedicated to Pierre's memory, opens in Paris. 1915, Marie and her daughter Irene lead a fleet of X-ray trucks to treat battlefield injuries during World War I. 1921, Marie tours the United States to raise funds for the Radium Institute. 1929, Marie makes her final fundraising trip to the United States. 1934, Marie Curie dies on July 4th of aplastic pernicious anemia, likely due to radiation exposure. 1935, Marie's daughter Irene and her husband Frederick Joliot win a Nobel Prize in Chemistry. This concludes this installment of Radio Eye's Children's Story Hour and concludes this book. Please join us next time as we read more stories, fables, and fairy tales. Thank you for listening, and please stay tuned for the Lexington Herald Leader on Radio Eye.